It's just in my preference. I want a manager. Otherwise, what I found in the past, what I've done there is that I don't need anybody to show up. I get people to scrap and go. So don't go up right after. And I did have a request today to, on the hard copy handouts that I do, as far as having maybe four slides printed instead of six, so there's more room to write. So she sent me that email reminder. All right. So I think this is where we left off, am I correct? So this is actually, I think, kind of an important slide. I had a little bit of this discussion down in one of my last sections about the small group view about diaphragm and ultrasound and the FDA and muscle stim units. And that whole idea of the FDA approval, you know, when this equipment comes out, it goes through the FDA approval process, it's approved for certain procedures or certain treatments, it's validated by the FDA. But in the case of things like diathermy and ultrasound and modalities like this, I personally think there may be more to it than just simple heat or the effects of the heat. And kind of this idea of the last little bullet point at the bottom, the microvibration, molecular microfrictional heat, increased cell metabolism. I think that probably happens. What I don't think has been shown to a great degree is proof of that. But I get the sense, you know, when I utilize therapeutic ultrasound in my practice, I do it oftentimes with the intent of stimulating cellular healing, and with laser and some of these other modalities, even though the FDA approves it as a deep healing device in the sentence. So you can't really understand where we're going with that. You can't really state those claims that this is useful for such and such. But I want you to think maybe outside of that box that maybe there is more going on than simply just heat and vasodilation or some sort of muscle relaxation. There may be something being stimulated on a cellular level. I think that my own feeling, professional feeling, is that it does, but the proof isn't really out there. So I can't really make that statement. Yeah.
So what do you say to your patients?
I'm sorry, speak up a bit.
What do you say to your patients when they ask you
what? I would say something along that line. It's a great question. How do you phrase it to your patient, or how do I phrase it to my patient? I will say pretty much that, you know, that the FDA, the approval for this piece of equipment is for deep heating, i.e. muscle relaxation, anything that heat can lay claim to, we can pretty much lay claim to with the ultrasound. But in my own professional opinion, I think there may be something more to this. But you've got to kind of dance that fine line. It's a very, we run into a lot of that with a lot of our medicines too. You know, a lot of our herbs haven't been shown to bulk of what we do out there in naturopathic practice has been proven to FDA standards, with standards in quotes, but to FDA liking make those claims. So I just think it's education. Back to our principles, don't care, doctors, teacher, I really come down to that, and I'll explain to them why I think. If they have that aptitude to understand, you know, cellular energy, or if I can explain it in a way that makes sense to them, it isn't sounding too mumbo jumbo jokey. I just have really, the longer I practice, the more I spend a lot of that time. That whole docere thing really didn't make a lot of sense to me. But the more I practice, the more I realize it's a real key element in naturopathic practice. It's that whole educational piece. Patients love to learn, folks love to learn out there. As a matter of fact, in the last probably 6 to 8 years, it's almost flip-flopped. I've learned probably more from the patients because of everything else. They go out and educate. They get diagnosed with a very specific disease. They go out and learn a ton about it. Let's bring all that information to me. Here's like, what do you think about this? And the sacral people may be affected by, I'm going, wait a minute, biochem was a long time ago. it's fun. I just had a patient come in on this past week going through a bunch of IV infusions on, and she brought in a bunch of detailed studies of that liver function that are just way above and beyond because I don't do liver medicine right now. Grant, I'll be able to read them and resurrect that knowledge, but it's kind of fun. You guys you really need to think about is selecting the resonance frequency of the crystal. You know, and on the handles, usually, there'll be a little sticker on the Mettler handle, which you can see in the picture that I took. That sticker on the handle will tell you the resonance frequency of the cylinder. For our purposes, the equipment we're using around here, usually there's somewhere between 1 megahertz and 3 megahertz. For a derivative thereof, we have some 3.2 and 3.3 megahertz crystals. And remember, there's that inverse relationship with crystal frequency. The higher the frequency, the less the depth of penetration. The lower the frequency, the greater the depth of penetration. So the longer the wavelength, the greater the depth of penetration. So the 1 megahertz crystal, the way to dumb this down is the 1 megahertz crystal has the greatest depth of penetration. For our purposes, the 3 megahertz crystals have the least amount of penetration. Then your next selection that you have to make is your sound pin size, which basically is in reference to the size of the sound pin there. And those are given in what are called ERAs, or the effective radiating area. And they're usually 1, 5, or 10 centimeter heads. That's pretty standard in the industry from company to company. And that'll be written on the handle as 1 square centimeter, 5 square centimeter, 10 square centimeter. And so that really is just treatment size, because remember when I told you that the treatment size of an ultrasound treatment should be about twice the diameter of the sound head from the effective radiating area. If you have a 10 centimeter head that's this big, then twice that diameter, the treatment area should be about that big to focus on for each treatment cycle, right? Everybody was clear on that? If you're doing the whole back, the lower back, which is this big, and we have a 10 centimeter head that treats this big of an area, there's basically four of those treatment sites in the low back region, right? And let's say we're going to do it 5 minutes each. That doesn't mean what we don't want to do is take that 5 times 4 and make it a 20-minute treatment and do the whole area. Because you don't tend to accumulate enough energy in any one area while you're doing that. So break that into quadrants. Do 5 minutes of this part of the back, 5 minutes, 5 minutes, 5 minutes to get a more effective treatment. So you need to select the sound height. And as far as selecting ERAs, basically select it on with regards to the size of the area that you're going to treat. If you're treating a big area, choose a big head, small area, small head. And here's that reminder about the depth of penetration, the inverse correlation between the frequency of the crystal and the depth of penetration. So, let's see if there's anything else. Absorption and so there's less acoustical absorption by the superficial tissues, thus greater depth of penetration. Research has shown that deeper tissues, i.e. muscles, tendons, ligaments, and joint capsules, have higher coefficients of acoustical absorption. This is probably due to their high protein and collagen content, from what they suspect. There's also density of a little more fluid in that region. That has something to do with it as well. So you're trying to penetrate. So right there should kind of give you an idea, because I've been asked, well, what should we treat, you know, what conditions, kind of back to that cookbook, which I want to try to avoid. What conditions should we treat or can we treat with ultrasound? Right there should give you somewhat of a hint. You know, and it's muscles, tendons, ligaments, and joint capsules. I might throw bursa in there as well. But that kind of gives you a lot of those tendinitis, tendonitis, bursitis, arthritis, a lot of those tendinitis. Often I often think about therapeutic ultrasound. I would not do it probably in the case of a septic joint, like a, you know, an infection. Because again, probably don't want to promote any more inflammatory products and stuff that's already going. A septic joint's a serious condition. You need to be much more aggressive than ultrasound with that. A torn joint capsule is probably going to need some sort of surgical intervention because those are confined spaces. So I'm thinking about it more in the case of, you know, a joint capsule, not so much the capsule specifically, but the joint within the capsule, you know, this meniscus and things like that that might benefit from increased fluid flow, things like that, for healing problems. That's how I want you thinking about this, kind of what you were doing there. You weren't looking for a cookbook, you were trying to think about the modality and how it would affect the tissue entirely. And here again, just a reminder about the higher the frequency of the crystal, the greater and faster the rate of absorption by the superficial tissue. Look on the picture that I took of those sound heads. You can see the top top number, the ERA, refers to the size of the sound head, and then the frequency of the crystal is there. The BNR basically is a ratio that, again, some of you may have read it in the Belanger, but that basically gives you an idea of kind of the quality or the efficiency of the crystal setup that you have. You can read more about it. I don't find that a great use because I kind of do that research, you know, up front when I'm researching the manufacturers up there, but that's what it refers to. So the two that I want you to know from a clinical perspective is the ERA and the crystal frequency. I inevitably go into the rooms, and again, it's a long time, relatively long time until you guys are in the clinic. And inevitably, I run in there because I usually don't get in the room immediately, and you guys tend to go in and start treatment. And I get in there and see that you've got the wrong sound head with the wrong crystal on it, you know, we're not getting the treatment that we prescribed. You're going to be too weak for the crystal, and you don't have the intensity on it, or as I sat down in the lab, and a lot of the times you have forgotten on the Mettler unit is to turn it over to watts per centimeter squared, which, again, thankfully is not harmful. I think I brought that up in my labs. You know, when you use the ultrasound, one of the first things you do on the Mettler is just change it from watts to watts per centimeter squared. If you happen to leave it in watts, you won't over-treat. In all cases, you'll be under-treating the patient. You have less energy. It's not harmful in that way, which is kind of a good thing. And I think that's probably why they set it up that way, is because some of the old school machines you were still doing the conversion. It's the only thing that makes sense to me because it's just so much easier to watch per centimeter squared. As a general rule, just because a lot of you like the numbers, and I may throw this on the test at some point because I do think it's important information to know when you're selecting the sound heads. But as a general rule, the 3 megahertz, which again is the weaker, if you want to think about the one with less penetration, can penetrate tissues approximately up to 2 centimeters, whereas the 1 megahertz is 2.5 times that deep, 2.5 centimeters. The deeper the target lesion, the lower the frequency the ultrasound should be. One point in the ERA, we've gone over this. Really comes down to just the total surface area to be treated. You guys are pretty clear, most of you have got to play with it, are pretty comfortable with ultrasound. And then duty cycle. This has different terms, but duty cycle is probably, from an electrical perspective, is the most accurate term with regards to talking about pulsed or interrupted cycles of delivering the sound waves. You can either have a continuous or pulsed or interrupted. And in the case of our machines downstairs, these Mettlers, they're pre-programmed with a 40% interrupted cycle on there. So it's 40% on, 60% off, roughly half and half with that one button, pulse button on there. And you saw with the Amherst machines down there, you have almost an infinite, well, within 100% anyway, range of changing that. Why do we do, what's the benefit of doing an interrupted cycle? What are the two big properties of ultrasound? Mechanical and thermal. So where at least in my description of the two, do I think that the, let's just break them both down. With regards to the thermal effects, what would be the benefit of using an interrupted cycle? Or what would be the outcome of using an interrupted cycle with a thermal effect? Decrease the amount of heat to that tissue, right? So it's less time there. And with respect to the mechanical properties of ultrasound and the interrupted cycle, what's the benefit? Or what's the difference? By interrupting it, I feel like you emphasize more the mechanical properties. If you're just sending out a continuous amount of energy from that sound head, and you can measure how many foot pounds I got by putting my fist into the tissue there, and that represents the mechanical energy. In a continuous pattern, it's pretty much just staying there, you know, holding like this, that amount of power. When I pulse it, then it's off, on, off, on, off, on. So I feel like when we pulse the mechanical, we get a little bit more of that last week about that Fresnel zone, the near Fresnel zone, which is basically where the area is most, the energy is most concentrated coming out of that sound head. And that sticks out from, a, you know, if this is a sound head, it sticks out probably about that far. So you've got an inch, half inch, that's a good range to be working from the tissue. And then because of being in the water and being away from the tissue a little more, I think it's a pretty good habit to bump the intensity up by about 0.5 watts per centimeter squared if you're working in water. So that likely will show up on the test as well. So if you were going to work, if you looked at the hand, you know, the wrist and thought, okay, I'm going to use this sound head and I'm going to choose an intensity of 0.5 watts per centimeter squared for gel. Once you put it in water, you should keep that intensity up to 1.0 watts per cent or 1 watt per centimeter squared. The cushion contact is that other method. Again, we don't have any of these down there, but they're available out there. They're basically like a bladder type, rubber bladder filled with a couple of medium or fluid in there that will act as a couple of medium. Slow circular motions, they say, the textbooks will say to go about 4 centimeters per second, should be that speed, yeah. The cushion can work again on the joints and stuff because it'll conform nicely. It's like if you're going to work on the wrist, that bladder will kind of conform and soften. The cushion will conform to there, and because it's larger, it'll give you a place to put the sound head where you transmit. Yeah, you're still trying to be parallel to that area. I mean, you know, once you get out on the wrist here, there's obviously that's the diagnosis there. I haven't played with them. I've seen them. I haven't played with them. I keep saying every year, maybe get a couple of just to see. But it just becomes a cost of just to fill a basin with some water or that couple of mediums so that are cheap. And most of where I use it for in my practice, I tend to use ultrasound in my private practice more because physical medicine that I do is so much focused on my skills and osseous manipulation because that happens to be my little gift or something that I made my little gift. That in my office, I use it basically as a heat alternative when I want focused heat. So I'm not doing a lot beyond occasionally I am. So it's just easy to, and that's usually upper traps, scaling, you know, big parts of the body. So I do use a fair amount of the dexamethasone. In that grapefruit, this is my big comment before that it's funny because I'm bringing up that grapefruit notion. How big should the treatment area be? And you guys will all remember the word grapefruit. I'm trying to figure out how to make this entire quarter a grapefruit quarter. I can teach you all in terms of grapefruits. It's something that people, like, I run into somebody 5 years I've been in this class and ask them that one question and they'll get that right. They won't remember anything else. So if anybody knows how to do that, and then a foot pound of pressure is pretty much just contact of that sound head. Just light pressure. Don't be emotional. And these matter. It sounds stupid to give you these figures, but it matters. To keep treatment delivery consistent. If one day you see a patient, you're just locking over and going to town, there's going to be different accumulation of energy than at a slower pace. And so I think the most important thing, in my opinion, is that you, once you're doing this with any routineness, is that you maintain consistency on your pressure and your speed of your sounding. So that you can keep your treatments consistent. Because there is a lot of variables here. How much gel you know, how thick that gel space is between the sound head, how much pressure, how much speed, obviously the settings on the machine. There's a lot of variability. The main purpose, you guys understand the whole idea of the coupling medium, commercial ultrasonic gel. Remember, it is important to know that other liquids, gels, oils, creams, and lotions should not be used to their possible. It doesn't mean that they all would be bad, but you're better, I mean, as physicians, you're expected to use what's recommended for a piece of equipment, and that would be just a certified coupling medium. So you want to watch. Most of those things contain, you know, in the case of oils, obviously, the oil isn't going to transmit as well as the water, and the lotions and creams usually contain a fair amount of air, like air bubbles in there that will kind of screw up the delivery of the energy. that being said, how many of you homeopaths are in here? You future homeopaths? You know, things like Trombeal and some of these things. I'll get some of the Trombeal gel. And again, I've told you kind of my stance on homeopathy. It's not my big thing, but I also don't see potential great harm in like an acute or subacute injury with some Arnica, you know, some Trombeal or Arnica in there. Thank you, why not? And so I will oftentimes take a little Trombeal gel and squirt a dab of Trombeal gel in the company meeting gel and mix it together and try to something that there are kind of some exceptions there, but again, just not diluting it way down, or keeping the substance in your attic very diluted would be a good idea. And tap water, there's the one little thing in parentheses there that I'd like to point out that I didn't bring up in lab. You'll see in some occasions when you're doing it in the water immersion, that you'll get little microbubbles that will adhere to the sound head. Just reach down. If you start to see a bunch of bubbles accumulating on the sound head, reach down with your finger and wipe those off because that will disrupt the emission of this sound waves from the sound head. And then I think we all know this, so we should be able to buzz through this relatively quickly. Make sure there's no contraindications. This is just, I'm just kind of giving you a linear way of thinking about this. So these slides would be ones that might be nice slides when you get to the clinic. If you had to do a quick review, it would probably be done in these last couple of slides here. Make sure there's no contraindication to treatment. What would be some contraindications just off the top of your head? Metal underneath the area to be treated would be nice and specific. But as I said, for you guys, in the case of Enflax, I would go better safe than sorry approach when it comes time to taking your exam. Because they usually won't specify that you're not right down here. They would say something more like there's, you know, a metal plate in the region or something. If there's any degree of suspicion, error on the side of safety, then as I told you guys in my lab, if somebody has, I'll work on people who have hands and screws in their knees, I'll work on their knees and bones too. But just because they've had enough experience, I'm pretty comfortable with it. Just you want to be careful. And then choose your transducer size. On a certain level, some have got to fix the size head, so there isn't that step. Turn it on, obviously, choose the appropriate mode of delivery, the duty cycle, if you want to pulse or interrupt it. Set the image to watts per centimeter squared if it's necessary. Again, on the Amrex ones down there, they just have the analog meter and the different scales where they have their screen on there to do that. Set the intensity, and for our purposes downstairs, like I said, let's work with it downstairs between 0.5 and 1.5 watts per centimeter squared. They go higher than that. They go higher than that for a reason because there's a need for it. I just didn't want anybody getting hurt or having a hugely negative experience with the machines. Set the treatment time, usually somewhere 3 to 10 minutes per treatment site. Like I said, in the back, you could do 20 minutes of ultrasound. As far as billing is concerned, most of the modalities that we're learning downstairs, almost all of them, including most of the hydrotherapies, tend to be billed in 15-minute increments. So if you're under 15 minutes, you bill one unit. Now, you know, I wouldn't bill two units until I got up to maybe 20, 25 minutes before I could bill for 30. So just kind of, you know, make sure your treatment, your chart makes mention of how long. And choose your method of application, direct contact, cushion, or water. Apply the coupling medium liberally. We've done that. I went over that. Don't skimp on that stuff. It's relatively inexpensive compared to most things. An important one, and I've ran into it a few times downstairs in the lab, is to place that transducer in contact with the coupling medium on the machine before turning on the machine. And by turning on the machine, I don't mean power to the machine. I mean turning on the go button so you're not using it in the air. And then the coupling medium, if it's water, the half inch to an inch of tissue, then they add an extra 0.5 watts per centimeter square intensity setting. Push the go button. We've gone over those 4 centimeters per second with about a foot pound of pressure. Continue until it expires. That kind of brings up the, should be obvious, but I see it all the time, and especially down in the clinic setting at Bastyr, we've mounted the units to the walls in 3 of the rooms. The table moves, the wall doesn't. So move your table around so that you, the practitioner, have ready access to the wall right here, and the treatment table is right here, and the student, because it's a pretty long cord with the transducer, and the student sitting over here working on the left shoulder, the patient's laying on the table, and they're working on their left shoulder over here. If that starts to hurt the patient, you can't reach the machine, so set yourself up so that you can either shut it off in that event, because if you run the risk, obviously if it's hurting the patient, you should take the sound head off, but then you run the risk of ruining your machine. So set everything up so you have easy access to change parameters, because you can decrease the intensity on the fly, which would be the most logical way to speed up your motion. Go ahead. I don't know why they haven't, because most of our electrical units down there will have kind of a kill switch for patients, which I almost seldom give to the patient because I set it up so I'm sitting right there. I don't think I've ever seen a sound head that has like a kill switch on it. There you go. There's your claim to fame. But like I said, for the most part now with the machines, if it's starting to get comfortable with the patient, you're pretty much safe just to pull the head off the patient because the immediate switch in there will shut off. But it looks a little funky to a patient if you're going like that and they say, ow, you do this. It just looks like to a patient that doesn't give them a lot of confidence. I think they would see more confidence if they started to say, ow, that hurts. And you say, oh, let me turn that down. You know, you reach over and you turn that down. It just exudes a little more confidence. I used to do a lot of vasectomies. I did about 500 vasectomies on urologists. Grabbing a suture or something as we're tying off the baths, and this little tiny suture that we're using, and you've got some alligator clamps that you're grabbing the end of the suture with, right? So you've got a naked guy laying there, and I would miss the end of the suture, and I go, oops! Innocent, it's an obvious kind of oops, damn little thing. The guy laying there naked while you're cutting on his, oops is not a good word. Doctor mind to enhance from a phlebitis. Hopefully that's kind of common sense. We don't want to further irritate that. Pelvic region during menstruation or other areas during active. Now, in the case of menstruation, if it's scant menstruation, if it's a menstrual situation where you want to improve blood flow, there's scant bleeding during the period, or have, you know, thick gelatinous bleeding, you know, clots and stuff, this might be an indicator for treatment. So again, using your minds to think this through. Don't just think about it as right and wrong. Caution in patients with impaired sensory responses, because you need that feedback. You want to watch in children over the epiphyseal growth plates. We don't really have them down to say whether that would be good or bad over that, so I would just avoid it. Those situations come from something different. And then this is very important, and I think the thing that I'll start to discuss today in lab is the diathermy, and then we'll present that to you when we get down there. But never use any, I don't want you to use any of the electrical equipment right there in close proximity with the diathermy when the diathermy is on. Because the radio frequency that the diathermy generates can disrupt some of the microcircuitry of these pieces of equipment. So even though it might be more time effective to have diathermy hands on and the ultrasound or the laser or something, if you're playing with multiple treatment modalities, which is oftentimes the case, we'll often do, for example, diathermy and laser. Do them separately. Do the diathermy and then shut it off and do the laser. We've had to fix one machine because of this at the clinic. So. And then here's, I hate throwing the word requirements because I don't like to dictate what you do out there, but here's some important things that should be in your chart note when it comes time to writing your treatment plan. So that, you know, especially in our clinic, because it's not just you doing it every week. Might come in, you might be on my shift on a Monday and see a patient. We decide to do ultrasound 3 times a week for 2 weeks. There's no way they can do it 3 times a week. I'm only on my shift with you because you and I are only together one of those days, and I'm only there Monday and Friday. So we need to make sure, especially when you're in the center, that we write treatment notes or plan to a level kind of idiot proof. So really writing all this out. So having these things that we mentioned in here, DRA, which size head. Which frequency of crystal did we use in that head? What was the duty cycle? Did we have pulse or continuous? How much time did we do? Which cup did we use? Did we do any phonophoresis in the treatment area? Size and location. And usually I prefer to draw those stick figures up and even, you know, further emphasize your description of the area that was treated. So here would be an example note that I just wrote up real quick. You know, 10 square centimeter ERA transducer with 1 megahertz crystal at 190 watts per centimeter. Reality of getting somebody in there, like with ultrasound, they probably would prefer take that